Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Drowning at the Diner by Beth Dolgner. Narrated by Patria Burchard. Chapter 1. I grasped the cracked wooden handle of the pot and raised it above my head triumphantly. "I found you," I whisper shouted. Behind me, a childlike voice said with a giggle,
"Does this mean you're staying a while then?"
I turned around to see Clara, one of my co-workers at Nightmare Sanctuary Haunted House, and a bona fide fairy, standing there with a grin. She was wearing dark sunglasses and a knit cap that was pulled down low over her ears. The sunglasses made sense because it was a sunny day, but the cap looked wildly out of place. It was late summer in Arizona, and everyone else at the yard sale was dressed appropriately for the heat. Of course, her violet eyes and pointed ears would have looked even more out of place than the knit cap, so I totally understood the disguise.
"Hey," I said happily, "I see I'm not the only one looking for a deal today. How are you not sweating to death?"
I eyed the knit cap.
Clara crossed her arms. "I asked you a question first. If you're buying pots and pans, then does that mean you're staying in Nightmare for a while?"
I looked down at the pot in my hand. It was worn and a bit discolored, but it was still in decent shape. It was, at any rate, the best option out of an entire cardboard box full of old kitchen items. I was hoping I'd have more luck at the next yard sale. "I've been eating out or making a sandwich for every meal," I said. "If I have pots and pans, I'll finally be able to cook for myself."
"You still haven't answered the question."
I smiled self-consciously. "I know. I guess the answer is yes. I'm going to stay for a while. And even if I do make it to San Diego eventually, I'll leave behind a stocked kitchen in my apartment." My apartment. The little studio wasn't really mine. It belonged to Cowboys Corral Motor Lodge, and I was only staying there through the courtesy, and maybe a little bit of sympathy, of one of the owners. I had agreed to do some marketing work for the motel in exchange for the free place to crash. Clara gave me a look of happy satisfaction.
"I'm glad to hear you're not going anywhere, and I'm sure Damien will be happy to know you're sticking around, too."
The sarcastic tone on that last part was impossible to miss. "Yeah, he'll probably throw a party to celebrate," I laughed. Damien Shackelford was a jerk. Yes, he was a jerk who had helped keep me safe when my life had been threatened, but he was still a pretentious man with a great big chip on his shoulder. I knew Clara didn't like Damien any more than I did. None of us at Nightmare Sanctuary had been happy when Damien had strutted in one day to take over his missing father's haunted house attraction. Clara and I chatted for a few minutes, then we both got down to the business of going through boxes and piles of items to find something worth taking home. In addition to the pot, I also got a small yellow porcelain planter with a succulent in it. I figured it would look pretty on my windowsill. I also found a book of crossword puzzles that had never been written in, thinking I would give it to Mama as a gift. Since she spent all day every day at the front desk of Cowboys Corral, I figured she could use something to help pass the time between welcoming guests. After I had paid for my fines, I wished Clara good luck and headed to my car. I had gotten it back from Dunright Auto Repair just a week before. Nick Dalton had not only fixed the oil leak that had left me stranded in Nightmare to begin with, but he had put on better brake pads, topped up all the fluids, and gotten the air conditioner to blast even colder air than before. I should have gotten a little gift for Nick, too, I thought. I told myself there would be other yard sales and other chances to find a little something to say thank you. The house that was having the yard sale was on the southern edge of Nightmare. Not that it was very far from anywhere in the little town. It seemed like a long distance from Cowboys Corral, which was on the northern side of town, but I was back at the motel in a matter of minutes. Cowboys Corral had two wings running back from the street, with parking in between. The two-story cinder block office sat up front, between the two lanes leading into and out of the parking lot. I parked in front of my studio apartment, which was on the second floor at the back of the motel, then headed to the front office with the crossword book. When I walked into the office, a man was standing at the Formica countertop. Mama was handing him a key, but she was eyeing him with clear discomfort at the same time. I hung back and waited for the new guest to continue checking in. The man was asking about good restaurants in town, where to find some nice hiking trails and that sort of thing. From his side, the conversation seemed completely normal. Mama, on the other hand, was giving him stiff, short answers. I noticed that after she handed him the key, she took a step back, as if she wanted to put distance between herself and the man. In just a minute, the man thanked Mama, gave her a little wave, and turned to leave. His round face and brown eyes seemed friendly enough. His sandy hair was a bit unkempt. Maybe he should have asked for directions to the nearest barber. But nothing about his looks or his behavior explained why Mama seemed so put off by him. "What's going on?" I asked, as soon as the front door had closed behind the man. "Are you okay?" Mama didn't answer. Her blue eyes were fixed on the man as he walked past the big front windows. "Yoo-hoo, Mama Dalton, you there?" I asked. This was getting a little creepy. Mama blinked rapidly a few times and finally looked at me.
"Oh, hey, Olivia, I'm fine."
I leaned my elbows on the counter. "No, you're not." Mama gave a little shrug, then absently ran her fingers through her fluffy gray waves.
"That man, he doesn't feel right to me. I don't think he was being honest with me about who he is or why he's here."
It wasn't the first time Mama had talked about getting vibes from a person, and I wasn't about to argue with her. If she didn't trust this guy, then neither did I. "You want me to keep an eye on him?" I asked. Mama nodded.
"He's in a room downstairs from your apartment. You let me know the second he does anything strange, but don't go putting yourself in a sticky situation."
Wow. So Mama thinks this guy might not just be dishonest, but dangerous, too. I promised her I'd be vigilant, then gave her the crossword puzzle. She thanked me 3 times before I headed back to my apartment to find the right spot for my new succulent. I didn't see anything of my suspicious new neighbor before it was time to head to work for the evening. I made the short drive to Nightmare Sanctuary and parked in the grassy field to the left of the 4-story stone building. The overgrown front garden and dirt-blackened facade really set the right spooky tone for a haunted house. I was sure the building had been just as imposing a century ago, back when it had been Nightmare Sanctuary Hospital and Asylum. But it had probably looked a lot cleaner and well-maintained, at least. I had just stepped under the portico at the front of the building, heading for the recessed double doors, when I heard someone call my name. I looked over at the window to my right and saw Zach Roth standing there, his long, rust-red hair tucked behind his ears, and his Nightmare Sanctuary t-shirt tight over his muscular torso.
"I hear you made a guy scream last night. Well done," he said.
"He was so scared he ran out of the room," I giggled. I had been posted in the hospital vignette inside the haunt the night before, and I had jumped up from behind a silver gurney at just the right moment. Only a few seconds before he started screaming, I had overheard the guy tell his date that Nightmare Sanctuary wasn't actually scary. I had gleefully proven him wrong. I gave Zach a wave and continued on inside the building. Zach had a reputation for being in a foul mood nearly all the time, only perking up during the 3 days of the full moon each month when he was in his werewolf form, but he had been nice to me ever since I had helped clear his name in a murder investigation. I had gotten to see Zach at work as a werewolf just a week before, and it had been strange and exciting all at the same time. The guests going through the haunted house had just assumed he was a normal person in a costume. A really, really good costume. The dining room was about half full when I slid onto a bench at one of the tables. My friend Maury was already there. She was wearing a plum-colored silk gown that set off her dark skin and burnt orange eyes beautifully. She smiled, her vampire fangs showing, and said, "Clara says you've been shopping for kitchen things. I'm glad to hear you're staying." I felt something on my leg, and I looked down to see Maury's pet chupacabra, Felipe, rubbing his gray, leathery face against my shin. "He's glad, too," Maury added. It was the second time that day someone had expressed pleasure that I wasn't leaving Nightmare. Not leaving yet, at least. I felt my cheeks flush. "Thanks," I said quietly. I was spared from having to say anything else, since the sanctuary's acting manager, Justine, stepped up to the podium on a small platform at the far end of the room just then. She had been running things ever since Baxter, the sanctuary's owner, had disappeared more than 6 months before. She was still running the day-to-day operations, at least when Damien didn't get in the way.
"Good evening, everyone," Justine called. "First, expect a few more guests than we usually have on a Thursday night. The Booster Club for the Nightmare High School football team has been selling those tickets we donated. Second,"
as Justine continued, I looked around the room, wondering where Theo was. He was the other vampire at the sanctuary, and he and I had quickly become friends.
"Looking for me?"
someone whispered into my ear. I jumped and slapped a hand over my mouth so I wouldn't let out a startled yell. Theo had snuck up on my right side while I had been looking to my left.
"Theo,"
I hissed. I didn't want to disrupt the nightly staff meeting, which I like to think of as a family meeting, so I tried to convey my exasperation with my facial expressions. It only made Theo cover his own mouth to keep from laughing. He was really proud of how well he could sneak up on me. When Justine announced I would be working in the Lagoon vignette that night, Theo gave me a little nudge.
"Yay,"
he said quietly. I was mostly splitting my time between taking tickets at the front door and working in the Lagoon vignette. Last night's spectacular performance in the hospital vignette had been my first time working that particular part of the haunted house. Once the meeting wrapped up, I made my way to the wardrobe room and got dressed in my usual red coat with lacy cuffs, matching skirt, and tall brown leather boots. I stuffed my shoulder-length auburn hair under a black tri-corner hat. Wearing a pirate costume was becoming second nature, even though I had only been doing it for about 3 weeks. The Lagoon vignette was an impressive sight. There was a small but detailed replica of a pirate ship in the space, and the walkway guests followed went up onto a catwalk that spanned a shallow pool. Above, faux vines dangled from branches. But the most impressive part of the vignette was the mermaid inside the large crate that sat in front of the ship. One side of the crate was glass, giving guests a view of Serafina swimming inside. She was actually a siren rather than a mermaid, and she was gorgeous despite having a faint green tint to her skin. When I arrived at my post, she was upside down in the crate, her silver tail lifting out of the water. I heard Theo spluttering and knew she had splashed him. "It's what you get for sneaking up on me again," I called to him, laughing. Theo grimaced.
"And I can't just dry my face or I'll rub off all my zombie makeup."
I was still laughing when the overhead lights flashed 3 times, then went out completely. Nightmare Sanctuary Haunted House was open for business. Late in the night, I had just finished hurrying a group of guests out of our vignette and into the next, when I heard a shout. It was Serafina. She had hoisted herself up so that her entire torso emerged from the top of the crate. She braced herself on the edge and glared down at a man standing just in front of her.
"I said stop," she yelled.
There were a few dull thuds, then she screamed.
"I will drown you if you don't stop it right now."
Chapter 2. Through the dimness, I saw Theo approach the man Serafina was screaming at. He bent at the waist and deftly hoisted the man over his shoulder. The man yelled in protest while Theo hauled him out like he weighed no more than a child. As Theo disappeared through a hidden door that led into the network of pathways between the vignettes, I ran over to Serafina. She was staring in the direction of the door, strands of her wet blonde hair sticking to her face, which was twisted in anger. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see there were several guests who had witnessed the whole scene, and they were gaping at Serafina. I caught the eye of one of the other pirates and jerked my head toward the guests. Luckily, he got the hint and immediately began urging them toward the next vignette.
"Are you okay?"
I asked Serafina. I had to crane my neck up to see her, and a few drops of water splashed down from her shoulders.
"I'm fine. That man..."
The rest of Serafina's sentence was cut off by a loud, high-pitched wail, and I immediately pressed my hands over my ears. Clearly, the banshee had already heard that something had happened to her girlfriend. Serafina raised one arm and made a calming gesture. Fiona's wails didn't cease, but they did decrease in volume, and I was able to lower my hands. I turned and saw Fiona running up to Serafina's crate, her long white gown and her black hair both streaming out behind her.
"Sarah, what happened?"
Her voice, usually deep and smooth, was nearly as high-pitched as her wailing.
"I was on my way back from my break, and Theo charged past with a guy over his shoulder. He was shouting about you."
"I'm okay, Fiona," Serafina said.
Despite her repeated assurances, I could see the way her arms shook.
"Some man started banging on the glass, and when I surfaced so I could yell at him, he pulled a fish hook out of his pocket."
Fiona let out a sharp, angry wail. "What's the significance of a fish hook?" I asked. Serafina glanced down and gave her tail a swish. Since I was standing right in front of the crate's window, I jumped in surprise at the sudden movement.
"It's a threat and an insult," Serafina said darkly.
"Oh, right. Because she's half fish." Even if the man thought Serafina was just a woman in a mermaid costume, it had still been a mean gesture. I gave a curt nod, feeling silly for not having figured that out myself. I turned to see if any new guests had entered the vignette and saw that not only had 5 guests just walked into the room, but so had Clara. She rushed up to Fiona and hissed,
"We have guests. We can discuss this after we close for the night."
Fiona looked at Serafina grimly, then turned and began walking to the hidden door. Clara followed her through it, and the rest of us gave our attention to the guests, who were looking at us with confusion. One of the other pirates stalked up to the group. He pointed toward the hidden door.
"Anyone who doesn't follow the captain's orders gets thrown in the brig. You wouldn't want that, would you?"
5 heads shook, and someone in the group let out a sound that was part laugh, part scream.
"Then get moving,"
the pirate shouted. The group obeyed, and I filed in behind them, standing just a little too close to the last person in the group for her own comfort. When she turned and saw me glaring at her menacingly, she jumped and pushed the man in front of her, telling him to move faster. Ordinarily, I would have gotten a kick out of frightening someone successfully. Instead, I immediately glanced at Serafina again. She had returned to her spot under the water. Theo came back at some point, but we were too busy with guests for any of us to discuss what had happened. The last couple of hours of the evening dragged by as I replayed the incident over and over in my mind. I hadn't been able to get a good look at the man who had harassed Serafina, but I immediately thought of the guest who had checked in at Cowboy's Corral that afternoon. Mama had felt like something was off with him, so I couldn't help but wonder if he had been the one causing problems tonight. Serafina remained submerged until the sanctuary closed for the evening. No sooner had the overhead lights come back on following the last guest's exit than Fiona was in the lagoon vignette again. Serafina finally kicked her tail and broke the surface of the water as we gathered around the crate.
"Did you know the guy?" I asked.
Serafina shook her head.
"No."
"He's never going to get inside the sanctuary again, that's for sure,"
Theo said. I wasn't surprised he had joined us without me noticing, since he was a vampire, albeit one who had somehow lost his fangs. I just assumed his supernatural status gave him incredible stealth.
"Did you get his name?" Fiona asked.
I was relieved to hear her voice had returned to its usual husky tone. Theo shook his head.
"No. But we'll find him on the feed of the security cameras and hang his picture inside the ticket window. And when you're in town, Olivia, be on the lookout for a man in his 20s with long, wavy black hair and a tattoo of a skull on the back of his right hand."
"Noted," I said.
Of the 4 of us standing there, I was the only one who ventured into Nightmare on a regular basis. Theo, Fiona, and Serafina all stuck close to the sanctuary where they lived and worked. I also noted the description did not match my new downstairs neighbor at the motel. Nightmare Sanctuary closed at midnight. Typically, I would be back in my apartment and in bed by a little after 1 o'clock. Instead, I was still at the sanctuary at that hour. Word had spread about Serafina's encounter, and a lot of us wound up huddled in the dining room discussing it. Finally, when I had yawned twice in the span of a minute, I said goodnight and headed home. I didn't get out of bed until nearly lunchtime on Friday.
Even though I had been picking up kitchen utensils and cookware over the past week or so, I still got showered, dressed, and made the walk to the Lusty lunch counter for a cheeseburger and fries. I had eaten lunch there every day when I first arrived in Nightmare, and I didn't want to stop going completely. I was quickly becoming friends with my usual server, Ella, and I liked the food, so I told myself that going a couple of times a week was just fine. Also, between having my car paid for and trading marketing work for my apartment, I didn't even have to worry about money anymore. Not as much, at least. Despite the summer heat, I found that I preferred walking to the Lusty rather than driving there. It was only about a 15-minute walk, and if I cut down High Noon Boulevard, I could walk under the shade of the covered boardwalks on either side of the street. I had to dodge all the tourists by taking that route, but I could also catch a few minutes of a staged Wild West shootout in the dirt-covered street, which was fun. The Lusty lunch counter was on the street behind High Noon Boulevard, which meant it was a place for locals instead of tourists. The clapboard building had a high facade, and the sun-bleached wood and slightly lopsided balcony made it look more like something from a ghost town rather than the popular, bustling little tourist town that was Nightmare. Inside, though, the western look gave way to classic diner. I made a beeline for my usual stool at the stainless steel counter, and soon Ella was putting a diet soda down in front of me. I could afford to drink something other than water these days, which was a small but significant victory for me. "Hi, Ella," I said brightly.
"Hello, Olivia,"
Ella answered in a distracted voice. She was twirling the ends of her chestnut-brown ponytail with her fingers, and her eyes were directed toward the swinging double doors that led into the kitchen. Someone farther down the counter called Ella's name, and she jumped.
"Coming,"
she called in a shaky voice. Ella had stopped putting a menu down in front of me more than a week before when she realized I always got the lunch special of a cheeseburger and fries. In fact, she had started putting my order in the moment I sat down. I was surprised then, when I slurped down the last of my soda and still didn't have any food in front of me. Ella had been bustling back and forth, busy with the lunch crowd, and finally, I called her name.
"Oh, Olivia, hi!"
Ella looked faintly surprised. Then, with a self-conscious laugh, she said,
"Right, you were already here, and I already said hi. Let me refill your drink. I'll put your order in, too."
Before I could ask what was going on, Ella turned and walked away. When she came back with a fresh soda for me, I reached out and lightly touched her arm as she put the glass down.
"You okay?"
I asked. I realized with a start it was the third time I had asked that question, or some version of it, in just 24 hours. First it was Mama, then Serafina, and now Ella. Ella hesitated, her brown eyes darting toward the kitchen doors. She bit her lip, then leaned in close to me and said quietly,
"There's a new dishwasher who just started here yesterday. I don't know why, but I don't trust him. He gives me the creeps."
My thoughts instantly turned to my new neighbor. He hadn't been the bad guy in Serafina's story, but maybe he was the villain in Ella's story instead. If the new dishwasher had started the same day my neighbor had arrived in Nightmare, then it was possible they were one and the same person. Ella bustled off, and a short time later I had my lunch in front of me. I was eyeing the kitchen doors as much as Ella, wanting a peek at whoever was behind them. When I was done eating, I let my gaze rove around the diner. When my eyes reached the booth in the far back corner, I froze. My new neighbor was sitting there, staring intently in my direction. I hastily turned around just as Ella was putting my check down in front of me. She glanced at me and blurted,
"What?"
"The man in the back booth is giving me the creeps," I said. Maybe Mama had been right about him. Was he watching me? Ella quickly glanced that way, then said,
"Maybe we can introduce him to our dishwasher, and they can go hang out anywhere that's not here."
"Good idea." One of the kitchen doors opened, and Ella gasped quietly.
"It's him,"
she whispered. The new dishwasher had a baseball cap pulled low over his eyes, and his white t-shirt was loose on his thin body. He walked right over to Ella, standing far too close to her, in my opinion. I couldn't hear what he was saying to her, but I could see how intense his gaze was.
Ella took a step back toward me, so she was pressed up against the edge of the counter.
"Win?" Ella said, in a warning tone, her back arching in an attempt to put more space between her face and his.
"Ella,"
he answered flatly.
I had my mouth open to tell him to watch himself when he reached up and gave one of Ella's giant hoop earrings a gentle tug. Wynne had a tattoo of a skull on the back of his hand. Chapter 3. The new dishwasher at the Lusty lunch counter was the same man who had gotten himself hauled out of the sanctuary the night before. I sucked in my breath and leaned forward over the counter.
"Excuse me," I said firmly.
Wynne turned to me with a fiery glance, and it was even easier to understand why Ella was unnerved. Not only was Wynne crossing a line in his behavior toward her, but he also looked dangerous, almost wild.
"You need to take a step back," I said.
No sooner had I said that than a man's voice called,
"Wynne."
I looked up and saw a tall, slightly overweight man who looked to be in his 50s, standing with one of the kitchen doors propped open. He ran a hand over his balding head, then gestured for Wynne to return to the kitchen. Wynne looked at Ella.
"See you soon,"
he said. After a moment, he disappeared into the kitchen again. Ella let out a shaky breath. When I started to speak, she interrupted me with,
"Yeah, I'm all right. He was just making small talk, but..."
I crossed my arms. "But he was making small talk in your personal space. That is not okay. Who can you talk to about him? Who's your manager?" Ella waved an arm toward the kitchen.
"Jeff hired him, and he owns the diner, so I don't think talking to him about it would do much good."
"I can stick around for a while if you want backup," I said.
"Thanks, but my boyfriend is on his way over. Kyle is about twice the size of Wynne, so I'll be safe."
Ella managed to give me a small smile. I didn't leave until I had encouraged Ella again to talk to Jeff about Wynne's behavior. I didn't want to tell her about Serafina, figuring that would only leave her feeling even more anxious about Wynne. But it was clear the guy had a pattern of acting inappropriately toward women. If the owner of the Lusty had hired a creep, then he needed to know it. I went home feeling unsettled, too. My neighbor had vacated his spot in the back booth by the time I left, but between his staring and Wynne's behavior, my trip to the Lusty had not been the enjoyable experience I had expected. At least, I told myself, I have work tonight to look forward to. That was the thought I kept in my mind all afternoon as I sat at the small formica table in front of the kitchenette in my apartment and prepared social media posts for the motel. I'd had to sell my sleek, modern laptop shortly after the divorce since I had been broke, so Mama had loaned me an ancient, hulking model whose battery didn't even hold a charge anymore. At least it was better than nothing. I was still looking forward to my night when I arrived in the dining room of the sanctuary for the family meeting. It was a Friday, which meant big crowds, and more people always made the time go swiftly. Instead of Justine stepping up to the podium to address us, though, it was Damien.
Great. It was never good news when Damien got up to talk.
Damien was wearing a pair of charcoal gray trousers and a black button-down shirt. He reached up and patted his wavy, light brown hair before he started to speak, as if he didn't already know it looked perfect.
"Good evening," he said.
"Is it?" I heard Maury say under her breath.
"I wanted to address the incident that happened last night in the Lagoon vignette,"
Damien continued. He turned his green eyes toward the table I was sitting at, but I could tell I wasn't the one he was focused on. It was Theo.
"We have a reputation to protect, not just in this community, but with the tourists who come here to enjoy Nightmare Sanctuary. If a guest is breaking any of the rules, or behaving in a way that seems inappropriate for the family atmosphere of this place, then our operational procedures state that you should find a staff member with a radio and ask them to call security."
My jaw dropped. Was Damien really implying Theo hadn't done the right thing by hauling Wynne away from Serafina? I mean, sure, Theo probably could have done it without throwing the guy over his shoulder, but Wynne had deserved to be ejected.
How much more would Wynn have upset Serafina if Theo had taken the time to find someone with a radio, then waited for security, in other words, Zach, to show up? Besides, Zach...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?